Well, the phone lines are jammed. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, Dr. John Bindernagel, as we talk about Sasquatch. This is Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, tell us, what is the North American Ape Project? Who heads it up? How did it start?
Well, that was the title that I attached to a grant that was awarded to just simply describe our efforts to conduct field research, to collect evidence and carry out habitat analyses and evaluations in various areas across the Western United States. I'm effectively the director of that. Currently, there are my principal collaborator is John Mianzinski, who I mentioned previously, and then right. We have other volunteers that are affiliated to varying degrees with the project.
Do you go on, and do you continuously go on Bigfoot searches and hunts?
Well, my time is a bit constrained because of limited funding support, and so, but we do attempt to get out for at least 2 weeks to a month to investigate potential areas and to follow up on recent activity, and to try to collect, as I said, evidence in the field, and that has yielded some interesting data.
All right, let's go to the phones. They are jammed up for both of you. Now, the international line, where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
This is Bob. I'm up in the Ukraine right now.
Well, my gosh, Bob. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This is a topic that I've always been interested in ever since I was 16. I grew up in the Rockies of Colorado. At the age of about 13, I was up at a place called Bear Lake. Saw what we saw was a pair of what we considered Sasquatches at that time. It always intrigued me. And then I got my chance for the first time to be sent over with the government over to Russia on an exchange program for scientists as an epidemiologist working on air problems over in Leningrad. And during that time, I had got to go and do some research at the University of Leningrad, which they wanted me to perform some air samples in mm-hmm. their museum's basement. And during that time, as I was down there, I had was pulling my samples and working with a young environmental scientist for Russia that was working with me, Sergey. And I happened to come across a 7'8" statue. It was in a glass case of what looked to be a Sasquatch. And I was stunned. It just kind of startled at that time. And I thought, well, I'm going to ask some questions about this. And sure enough, there was a tag number on it in Russian. And to make a long story short, I had asked Sergey if he could possibly give me some information on where they had gotten this or what it was all about. And to my astonishment, they had captured this back in the late 1700s. And it came from a place called Northern California, which at that time Russia had an outpost up around, I believe it was Mendocino or between Mendocino and Bodega Bay at that time. And they had brought it back to Russia to study it. And I had asked to see if we could get some hair analysis on it as well as some dermal, because I wanted to see just exactly what they had found. And sure enough, some of the studies that were performed on this thing was that it had 9 layers of skin. It had, what I recall was, this was back in 1992. Its foot was about 17 inches long. It was everything that you guys are looking for. So if you're looking for a missing link, I would definitely maybe see if you can get a hold of the University of Leningrad out there and see what you can come up with.
Have either one of you, Jeffrey, John, have you heard of this one before?
Nope, that's a first for me.
That sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, it does. It sounds pretty legit. Bob, what can we do to get some more information? Just a quick call to the University of Leningrad? Would that take?
Yeah, I would probably try to get a hold of the anthropology group there and see if you could investigate. I know it was on the third basement level of the museum section there. That's where I was doing analysis. And I thought it was at first, when you look at it, it looks, you know, something that is just out of place. But the hair analysis and that were performed on it, and granted, guys, I don't speak good Russian or do I read it well. I was only over there to do hair analysis and teach them what we know, you know, because I worked for the Environmental Protection at that time. It was astonishing, and if their records are correct, they did bring it back in the late 1700s from someplace there in Northern California, which I guess they had an outpost at that time.
That's amazing, too, all by itself. All right, Jeffrey, we'll let you guys run with this.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bob.
All right, thanks, Bob.
You bet. I just wanted to let you know that if it's actually indeed the missing link, the Russians had captured that back in the 1700s. So
from California.
From California.
Oh. Okay. All right, good. We appreciate you being on the program. Mm-hmm. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hey.
I'm a field investigator with SasquatchDetective.com or SquatchDetective.com.
Okay.
And the reason I got interested in this is because of a personal encounter I had. And I have a game cam photo that I'd like to share with you. I have it posted on a small website. If it's okay to give you the website, I
tell you, if you would send me the picture, could you do that first with the website underneath it?
I've mailed a hard copy to you, but I don't know if it got lost in the mail or what.
No, I didn't get it, and I'm sure Lex or Sean never got it either. But I tell you what, I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay, that'll be great.
All right, Jessica, why don't you take his number and the website, and we'll take a look at it. Appreciate that, and see what you've got. Next up, we'll go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hey, hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Good show. George, my question is, I'd like to know if your guest know the scientist that erred when he proclaimed that the Sasquatch that was pictured in the film where he was walking was supposed to be the real thing, and it would turn out to be the woman who dressed in a costume. Remember that show or incident, George?
Yeah, and I think it was the Patterson. I think. What do you think that was, Jeffrey?
Well, there was a lot of confusion surrounding the claims that the Wallace family was making, and at one point, there was no question that Ray Wallace did put his wife in a gorilla costume, in a Sasquatch costume, and take pictures of her. But they were so ridiculously transparently hoaxed that whenever the news media would talk about it, rather than showing those images, they would cut to a clip of the Patterson film.
Uh-huh.
And so people began to assume that it was Mrs. Wallace in this costume, marching across the sandbar, as was depicted in the Patterson film. I spoke to Michael Wallace, the son, directly on the phone, and he adamantly asserted that his father had nothing to do with that film, although they suspected it was a hoax. But as the interest in their story began to wane, that position changed. And suddenly it was Mrs. Wallace portraying Mrs. Bigfoot, and she was the one in the costume.
Right, but then they interviewed the scientist who vehemently said that this was not a human being in that costume. That was actually what he thought to be a Sasquatch. And
well,
I just wanted to know if you knew that gentleman. Or...
Well, I'm not sure which particular interview. It could have been me.
I don't remember the name, but this was on one of our channels here in Illinois. And they interviewed this gentleman, and he was a so-called scientist, and he made a mistake, which any of us can do, but he swore that this was the real thing, and it wasn't.
I'm not aware of a scientist in Illinois who would have made such a statement.
Okay, Robert, thanks for that call. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hello, good evening, George.
Yes, sir.
It is a great pleasure to talk to you guys. The first time I heard this show was in like 97 when Art was doing it.
Yes, sir.
And I was in a truck right out of high school with a guy driving through Oregon, and he was like a truck driver. And he was playing the show, and he said, this guy's on to something. And I was skeptical. And then we hit a Sasquatch.
You hit one?
Yes. And then like he was like a freelance truck driver. And the guy earlier was talking about the 9 layers of skin.
Did you guys get out and take a look at this thing?
Yeah. Well, it ran across the street. Like, he kind of clipped it, and the truck hit, like, a tree, and he wrecked his truck. And I was just out of high school, and I was, like, 1,000 miles from home. We lived in Pennsylvania.
So the creature wasn't out there on the road, or anything?
No, it ran across the street.
Okay.
And it was, like, and the whole time we were listening to the show, I didn't believe it. But when he hit it, it changed me. I've been a fan since.
Well, what a strange way, Jeff, to become a friend listening to the program, and then you hit a Bigfoot. I've had a lot of calls like that. People, these things dart out in front of the road a lot. But they're not very violent.
No. Don't seem to be. The only reports that I'm aware of where there is really violent behavior, vehement behavior directed at the witnesses are historical accounts that whose credibility and accuracy we are uncertain of. But interestingly, in most instances of such reports, it's the human who has shot first, and the Bigfoot is reacting violently to that. To that action.
He doesn't seem to run away from a fight, does he, Bigfoot?
I guess not.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you?
We are fine. Thank you.
Good. First off, nice job at the Bigfoot Rendezvous in Idaho, Dr. Meldrum.
Well, thank you.
And we missed you there, John.
Hi.
I wanted to ask a question. What do you think would happen to the logging companies if a Bigfoot was found? I know you guys said you hadn't heard anything about a government conspiracy. Maybe I've seen too many movies. But I've heard from a friend of a friend who worked for a logging company a couple years ago in Northern California. There was a Bigfoot researcher there kind of looking for tracks and things. And my friend got a memo with his paycheck saying that no one from the logging company was allowed to talk to them, and any reporting of Bigfoot by any of the employees would make immediate termination happen. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well, I've heard similar anecdotes, you know, a friend of a friend, as you aptly described it. I've not had any firsthand experience that would validate any of that. I mean, the only thing similar to that I could share was when one of our field assistants had placed a camera just over a boundary into a national park, which caught the attention of one of the park rangers, who contacted me to find out just what this was all about. The university property tag was visible on the camera trap. Well, after a brief discussion with him, in which I laid my cards openly on the table, and once he had ascertained that I was quite serious and quite level-headed in my approach to this question, he confided that indeed he had seen one as a much younger ranger several years earlier when he was on the Border Patrol and had sat down under a tree to eat his lunch, and and heard a rumbling through the brush and thought, oh, here's a big bull elk, which were common in that area, and he was going to get a nice view of this bull elk busting out of the brush. But instead, he saw through the brush these two enormous hairy legs striding down the hillside. And he said, I can name four other people in my office who have had encounters, including a gentleman who just a couple months prior had had one run across the road, as you said, darting in through the headlights in the early evening. My question to him was then, well, what is the Park Service's official position? There was this pause, and he said, oh, they don't exist. He said, but there's a few of us in the office who know differently, and we just leave it at that. So I don't know that, I don't want to describe that as a conspiracy. I think, it's this resistance to acknowledge the possibility that John has so extensively described and features in his work in progress. I think it's just a matter of they see this as people perceive any association with this subject as rendering their credibility in question.
That's not really should be the case. You're right. First time caller line. You're up with us. Good morning.
Hello.
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 Yes. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I'm calling from Two Harbors, Minnesota. It's on the shore of Lake Superior. I had a couple of comments, and I wanted to see what your guest might have to say about it.
Okay.
As far as you're mentioning, George, the Iceman, Minnesota Iceman, I actually saw that in 1968 or 9 in Superior, Wisconsin, about the age of 12.
Do you remember it? Do you think it was real or a hoax?
Well, I have to tell you that looking at it, you'd have thought it was real. I mean, you could see literally flecks of blood suspended in the ice. You could see its fingernails. They're chipped. The hairs, individual hairs on its hand. There was an obvious wound in its, in his head. And it was remarkable. Man, I paid 50 cents to see this thing. And
yeah,
I've had a lifelong interest in it ever since. In my own life, I've read about this. I've looked into it for a lot of years and kind of kept an eye on what's being found out and what's being thought about it. I've had my own personal experiences about 15 years ago outside of my home in northern Minnesota here. I heard something approaching along a creek bed near my house one night, and it sounded like someone on 2 feet. And I thought, I'm pretty far out in the woods, but I thought, maybe it's somebody lost or something like that. I called out, and the footsteps stopped, and I called out again. There was no response. I called out another time, and still no response. And I finally said, listen, you're going to need to respond, or I'm armed here, and I'm, eventually I shot a round in the air. And when I did that, this, whatever it was, let out a vocalization that was so loud, like the air horn on a boat, that it was absolutely mind-boggling. It took off running, broke branches through trees, stopped, and then for some reason decided to turn around and start walking back in my direction again. I never saw this thing. I shot again in the air. It ran again, and this time it kept going. But I'd like to say that, as far as my feeling at the end of all this, having seen the Minnesota Iceman, having had my own experience, still in spite of all the physical aspects that seem to be a part of this mystery, is the fact that there's a metaphysical quality to all of this. And in Native American terms, most nations refer or think of Sasquatch with shamanistic qualities. It is there and it is not there. It appears and it disappears.
And some people have said that before. We'll be back. We'll get their reaction to that in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final calls, too. Well, our next Coast to Coast program, Linda Moulton Howe with one of her major investigations. Then we'll keep her for a second hour of phone calls with you and then open lines. The show will originate at the OnStar Studios in Detroit, Michigan. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Jeffrey, what about the previous question, the one about being very mystical, those possibilities with Bigfoot?
Well, I guess that I just would have to say that that falls outside of the realm of sort of our theme tonight, which is science, and those become very subjective experiences. And while I wouldn't necessarily rule that dimension out at all, it just does not lend itself to an objective evaluation.
How long have you worked on this book, Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science?
Well, it took root when in the wake of the Discovery Channel documentary by that same name, and it developed from there, and there have been other issues with the final publication. The manuscript has actually been complete for some time, but it's been a multi-year project.
Well, it's out now, and I wish you well with it.
Well, thank you.
Let's go back to the phones, west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello, George. Good evening.
Hi.
Hi, this is Dee Dee from southwestern Colorado. I'm a second-time caller.
Okay.
And how are you this evening?
Good. Go ahead, please.
Good, thank you. Yes, I had called you about 2.5 or 3 years ago, and it was about, I don't know if you remember, but it was about an alien or something to that effect that we had concluded that I may possibly have had on tape. And you wanted me to send it to you, and I never was able to quite get the physical address.
Oh, you're the one who didn't send it. That's right.
Yes. Well, I still have the tape, still really scared to play them back.
Well, you're not going to let me wait another 2.5 years, are you?
No, but something really weird has transpired since that time that I'm beginning to wonder maybe. Now I don't think it's alien-like at all. I definitely think it's Bigfoot-related.
So what do we do? How do we get to look at this?
Well, I also, I can get a physical address from you guys, and I can definitely send you what I have. I have the tape still. But I also, in the last 2 years, started noticing really unusual footprints. Like I said, I live in the mountains. And I noticed as like a family set, like a large 17.5, 18-inch footprint, like the father, I would presume, and then a smaller one, which is, I presume, a female, and a smaller one, which would be like a younger one. And over the period of 2 years, I saw the younger one's footprint grow larger. I also found nesting places around my house where they had slept. They also tried to communicate with me. I didn't want a lot of publicity with them because I didn't want to scare them off. My question for the doctors were if they thought that they were telepathic and if they thought that they migrated, because I haven't seen any activity this year. But they would, like, leave little presents for me, like broken sticks of various lengths that were the same or unusual feathers. I heard them come up on my porch, and I've often wondered if they were looking in the windows as well.
All right, John, I'll let you start with that. Telepathic, huh? What do you think?
I think it's just a kind of sensitivity. I myself wouldn't think telepathic. I think they do migrate. I think there's seasonal migration, often vertical. I guess that might be a mountainous area, which is in Colorado. And it's very interesting, this thing about leaving things that comes up from time to time. Often it's an exchange thing. If a Sasquatch removes something, it might leave something in return. Other times they just seem to leave things. So that's curious, and certainly there's now enough of those reports to suggest that that's a Sasquatch. I think it's really interesting that she's keeping such good track of the tracks and identifying individuals. So that's about all I have to say.
Jeffrey, what do you recommend someone do? What's the procedure if they see a Bigfoot? What would make data important? How do they handle it?
Well, the way you phrase that, see a Bigfoot, oftentimes that's such a fleeting experience that it's more often than not unlikely that the individual will be prepared or have the composure to document that experience either with a camera or with a video tape. But in the case of this caller, if she does continue to encounter footprints, I would encourage her to document those as thoroughly as she can. You know, put something, a very visible scale within the frame of the photograph, take pictures that are perpendicular to the surface of the ground so that the photo is the most informative to us. If the footprints are of sufficient depth or in soil that will hold up during the casting process, document it further with a cement cast, and I'd be very happy to take a look at any of that kind of evidence that she's inclined to share.
Absolutely. If we get it, I'll definitely get it over to you, Jeffrey, and let's get it analyzed as well as we can. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Good morning.
Hello, this is Gabriel from Odessa, Texas.
Yes, sir.
I believe I saw a UFO. I mean, a Bigfoot over there at the jumping from car to car at a car lot.
Jumping from car to car?
Yeah, and it had big feet, and it was furry. It was like a brownish, grayish color.
How do you know it wasn't a guy in a costume?
Well, it disappeared.
What do you mean it disappeared? It like just hopped its way away or what?
Yeah, into thin air. We didn't see it anymore.
Okay, what about the dangers of people, Jeffrey or John, who put on a costume and they go out? They're going to get shot at, aren't they?
Well,
I don't recommend they do this at home.
It would be a bit of a hazardous venture, I would say. Yeah, we would hope that, as John pointed out, most hunters don't shoot things that walk on two legs, but one could never be sure.
Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Good morning.
Hi, this is Kathleen. I'm calling from Applegate, Oregon.
Thank you.
Out in the Siskiyou Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a professional interspecies communicator and a shamanic practitioner from SasquatchSpeaks.com. And for the past 2 years, I've been having regular telepathic communication with the Sasquatches. And I was just wondering if John and Jeff, they addressed it a little bit, but do you guys have any belief that it's possible to have telepathic communication? I mean, I don't doubt that because I've experienced it, but I'm just wondering, as a professional Sasquatch researcher, what your real thoughts are about the possibility of that, and if you have had any experience with that. I'm looking at it from a spiritual standpoint, not the scientific standpoint, but I think sometimes we're called to expand our consciousness a bit, and I just wondered what the two of you might think about that or what your experience would be with that.
All right, you first, Jeffrey.
Oh, thanks. Sorry. Well, I guess my first question would be, do you also communicate, you're an interspecies communicator, but does your telepathic skill work as well within intra specifically? Do you communicate with other humans in the same way?
Well, yes, I do.
You do. Well, then my next question would be, what is the Sasquatch you're communicating with tell you?
Actually, it's really interesting. They have some real basic communication about, talking about what the humans can do to, heal the earth, as it were, and the things that we could do for the environment and, mm-hmm. Spiritual expansion. I mean, I think in these times, what I'm feeling is that the Sasquatches are really making themselves more known at this time,
mm-hmm.
Because we do need their assistance. They actually are very wise beings. I know that could sound sort of far out, but I am a professional right. practitioner of this. I'm not somebody that's out in left field.
Sure. Well, what's interesting is the familiar echo of your rendering of those experiences with similar accounts that have been shared with me by Native Americans, who oftentimes equate the appearance of Sasquatch with a message as a message bearer that the tribe is out of touch with the old ways, with the traditions, and that something needs to change to reestablish that harmony. And so, the message, the impression that you're receiving, that you lay claim to receiving, is very resonant with that experience that has been shared with me by Native Americans. And, I would just say, I don't really think it's for me to pass judgment on what you are experiencing. other than to qualify it, that, as you pointed out, it falls under a different into a different realm, under a different umbrella of knowledge, and so, as you know, your challenge to me as a scientist, what do I think? Well, there are times in my life when I take my scientist cap off and I put on a different cap and contemplate the experiences that people have in other dimensions and other realms of experience.
It's possible. Is it possible that these creatures are extremely intelligent?
Well, I guess, you know, one thing that scientists really need to learn to say is never say never, because there are always surprises. But so I guess it's possible. I just have to fall back to the statement which I made earlier, that if that is the case, then we really aren't yet in a position to comprehend what that intelligence denotes. Because, again, I would ask the question, what's so... Are they on vacation and they're just out on a walkabout in the woods? And if they have something to share with us, why are they inhabiting the wilderness areas as opposed to contacting us more directly? I mean, it kind of comes back to that same question that's often directed at investigators of UFOs, that if these extraterrestrials really have a message, why are they, you know, trying to convey it through cryptic crop circles instead of putting it on the headlines of the New York Times or a neon sign in the sky? I mean, I, again, not passing judgment, but just posing the question, what does that mean?
What does that mean? Maybe they want it to be easier for us. Who knows? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George.
Yeah.
And hello, folks there. I didn't get your names before.
It's Jeffrey and John.
Oh, Jeffrey and John. Okay. Well, George, this is your Planet of the Apes friend from Phelan, California.
Oh, I remember you, the actor.
Yes, and the special effects makeup artist.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a couple of pieces of insight I might be able to give you on the Iceman situation.
Okay.
My mentor, John Chambers, the man who won the Oscar for the original Planet of the Apes, once he won the Oscar, he was always being called upon to do all kinds of special projects back then. You get an Oscar, and then everybody wants you for something.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're good, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he was very unsung before that because he used to do jobs for other makeup artists and never got the credit for it. But I remember hearing him talking about being called upon to do this thing in the ice he used to talk about. And I had heard at one point that what was purported to be the original Iceman had started to deteriorate or thaw or was starting to break down. It seems that John was called upon to make the duplicate that could be put back into the ice again to continue sending it around to the carnivals. And he was very good at what he did. And one of the things that John did was trauma, because he had been a prosthetics man in the Army before he became a makeup artist, and he knew all kinds of trauma. So the caller that you had earlier, I don't know if he saw what was supposed to be the original Iceman or whether he saw the duplicate, but John would have had no problem with the trauma, even the ice and the blood and things. And in Planet of the Apes, he did the lobotomy scar on the one astronaut who was lobotomized. So he was just as good with trauma as he was with beauty makeups and prosthetic makeups like the apes.
And it reminds me a lot of the Alien Autopsy film as well. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate you being part of the program. East of the Rockies, good morning. You're up with us.
How you doing tonight, gentlemen? I have a couple questions. Number one, the proponents, you say that you can't have an ape in the United States because there are no apes. I believe it was recently discovered that the Carolina dog shares a very similar family with the dingo in Australia. Also, my question is this. I was always led to believe that the reason why humans walk erect is because we spent some time in our evolution in water, which is why our pelvis turned. Are you also suggesting that Bigfoot has spent time in the water too, which is why his pelvis has turned? And as an example of this, the otter's pelvis has turned, and that's why they mate face to face.
All right, Jeffrey, that's one for you.
Sure. Well, you're making reference to the aquatic ape theory, and it's an intriguing hypothesis that is really in want of any definitive data. There are some interesting and intriguing convergences that have been pointed to, our subcutaneous layer of fat, the convergences between us, between humans and aquatic mammals as opposed to great apes, things like our subcutaneous body fat and so forth, distribution of hair. But all of those can be equally well accounted for with other scenarios which find further corroboration in the paleontological and paleo-environmental and ecological record of hominid evolution. So it would be a huge jump then to go from that rather tenuous hypothesis to try to extrapolate an explanation for Sasquatch bipedalism due to an aquatic phase. Now, that doesn't say that given their body proportions and their anatomy that Sasquatch are not adept at swimming. And, especially up where John is at, one would have to almost appeal to a swimming biped to account for the distribution of Sasquatch sightings amongst the islands on the western British Columbian coast.
John, I'm going to give you and Jeffrey about a minute apiece just to wrap things up here. I would like you just basically to tell us again a little synopsis of your overall view of the possibilities of Sasquatch.
Okay, I'll just go ahead here. Well, basically, what we've been saying a lot, that we know a lot about the Sasquatch. It's actually quite well understood, but that there is this this barrier, this level of scientific resistance, which we've so far been unable to penetrate, but which we continue to attempt to do, and wish us luck.
All right, and go ahead, Jeffrey.
Well, and I think that the way to penetrate that barrier, or at least to make progress in penetrating it, is to increase the awareness of the scope and the depth and the nature of the evidence that does bear on this question in all its variety, from eyewitness accounts to the trace evidence of footprints and the physical evidence of hair and scat and hopefully eventually DNA. And that is the type of evidence that I try to wrestle with and expound upon in the new book, Sasquatch Legend Meets Science.
Very good. Gentlemen, first of all, thank you so much for giving us this scientific twist of Sasquatch. It was a great angle. I appreciate it from both of you.
Good. Thank you, George.
You're quite welcome.
In the book, Sasquatch Legend Meets Science, it's out there right now. It is a dandy. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Dan Brady, Jessica Spaulding, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie in the cave somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.